Hello, my name is Juan de Castro, and you're listening to Making Risk Flow. Every episode, I sit down with my industry-leading guests to demystify digital risk flows, share practical knowledge, and help you use them to unlock scalability in commercial insurance. Welcome to another episode of Making Risk Flow. Today, I'm joined by Clive Busnell, Managing Partner at Insurance Advisory Partners. He's got a brilliant and very broad experience in the industry. He's been Chief Executive of brokers, insurers, advisory firms. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion.
It's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Fantastic. Let's start with an overview of your background for those of you who don't know you.
Yeah, so I started my career at Andersons in 1990. I guess my first significant foray into insurance was in 1999. I was one of the original founders of Exchangely. And there was eight of us, and with some 50 million of capital from General Atlantic Partners. And we founded Exchanging, and we went then in 2001, launched a very major contract with Lloyd's. And we grew the business from 8 people to 8,000 people, and then clearly an IPO in that 10-year period. But that was really where I got to know the insurance industry and got to love the insurance industry, in fact, because I was right at the heart of that in Lloyd's, doing effectively outsourcing technology, et cetera, for the whole of the market. And then post-Exchanging, I was then CEO of a carrier in Lloyd's called Jubilee, which quite quickly sold on to Pat Ryan. And then I joined Deloitte into the insurance practice, where I ran the London market practice and then more laterally ran all of insurance for Deloitte. And that was, again, fantastic. Great clients, really great examples of doing big transformation programs for insurance companies, carriers and brokers. And then I left Deloitte to go and become the CEO of Tysers, which is the oldest broker in Lloyd's. I ran that business for nearly 3 years and went through a transition from being private equity owned to then selling to AUB Group of Australia, second largest broker in Australia. And then, as you say, a few months ago, joined Insurance Advisory Partners as investment banking. And again, really focused on the insurance industry, which I love, and very much all the pipe people there are really insurance experts through and through.
So if that sounds like you've very much done every role in insurance. I think you probably have not been an actuary, but I think that's probably the only role you've missed in your career. And that is one of the reasons I wanted to do this episode together, is definitely you've got a very strong experience from a business perspective, but also from a technology and data perspective. And I think I'm sure we'll get into the details into that, thinking about how does technology and data evolve the industry. So let's start with what's your view on kind of where is the industry today from a technology and data perspective, and what are the major areas of opportunity?
Well, look, certainly I don't think people will go to the insurance industry for great examples of data and digitization. Having said that, I think they will in 5 years' time, since this is a really great opportunity. It's a really interesting industry, as we know, but not great examples today. Let me just digress slightly for one of the, and I have this vision of how insurance will transition. 10 years ago, if you had a car, you had to renew your tax in a car, and you'd have to get all these paperwork. You'd have to get your registration certificate, your MOT certificate, your insurance. You have to get all these papers together, and then you'd have to wander down to the post office, stand in a queue. And then you get to the front of the queue and you'd find actually you hadn't got the right paperwork. So off you had to go again, get the rest of the paperwork. And then finally, if you've got everything right, then write out manually a little tax disc on a piece of paper that had perforated edges. And you had to go home and take this piece of paper and tear it off. And by tearing off the perforated edge, you typically tore it in half as well. And then you had to put it physically in the windscreen of a car. That was how to get the disc. And of course, the police then had to sort of go around and physically look at people's tax discs and see whether cars were insured. Now, that is a completely digitized process. There's no longer paperwork. You know whether you're insured. You know whether you've got an MOT. You know whether the car has got all the valid stuff, all online. And you just go online, put your credit card in, and you renew your tax. And of course, then the police have a view of every car, whether it's taxed or not. For me, that's a complete digital transformation from highly paper, clunky process to a completely digital process where it's just an entry in a database that defines whether you're taxed or not. And I think insurance is still at the paper end of that journey. And I'm excited by where it will be, that complete transformation. And data is at the heart of that for me. But data in itself is not that interesting. For me, it's what data allows you to do, what data enables that gets really interesting. And that's where I'm very passionate. And in terms of what can you do with data and how it generally transforms an industry over time.
So perhaps we can use that analogy to think about, like, what are the steps the insurance industry needs to go for that? And based on the example you just described, the first thing is how do you start by digitizing the process up front and capture that data up front, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think still too much effort, and rightly so, to try and get some efficiencies, focused on sort of how do I sort of automate a sort of broken process, if you like. How do I automate a broken process? I'm much more interested in how do you start upfront with reliable, timely, and quite frankly, irrefutable data that everyone agrees is correct. And that data then flows through the whole process and is the primary data. Now, we've seen examples of this. The work that Lloyd's is doing, for example, of Blueprint 2 is very much about how do you get a core data record that you can define upfront and can be used throughout the transaction and to create the transaction in a timely way. But again, that's core data. I mean, there's two elements for me is what is the core data that you can use to drive a transaction in a very timely way? And there's all the other data. And for me, the core record should be standardized. And this again came from another example where I was in a meeting actually in Monte Carlo with some very senior insurance people around. And they said, we should use the example of MasterCard that has enormous amounts of data on clients and shopping habits and when people buy things, et cetera. But in order to transact, they have a very defined core record that every merchant can use, and they understand that it's 20 fills, whatever you need to transact with MasterCard. That doesn't involve all any of the other data. That's just the transaction record. And I think we should differentiate between getting that transaction record so we can get real efficiency and timeliness in the transaction, and I'll come on to what that can enable in a bit. And then we should think about getting all the other data. How do you, we'll never standardize all the other data. And stuff that comes in for underwriting comes in so many different forms from so many different participants, be they the brokers, be they clients. I think we should bother even trying to standardize that. We should use some really clever technology that brings all that together and creates a standardization that you want. So if you're a particular carrier, you define how you want it and you use clever technology to bring that together, not try and say to everyone, submit this in a standard way, because they just won't, in my view. So you have some really clever technology up front that allows you to standardize the data in your organization.
And to some extent, what you call all other data, it's also the competitive advantage of each insurer, right? Each insurer will want to capture slightly different.
Exactly. And this data comes back to the MasterCard. There's no way MasterCard would allow anyone to have all that customer data, because that's absolutely the differentiating data. But it's not bothered about the core record, because that's just what creates the transaction. So all that other data is really, getting really great data for underwriting and allowing you to look at differentiate risks, select risks that you say are already straight through processing or ones that are not in your risk appetite. All of that will not be defined by the core data record of the transaction. That's all the other things that you'll get submissions on. You go out to external data. That there needs really clever technology, but again, upfront. There's no point sort of waiting weeks or months to collect it, or waiting until later in the process and rekeying it. Or how do you bring all that together upfront in the process? And I see too many people talk about digital. Digitization, well, what they really mean is automating the process. Digitization for me is getting data upfront that's irrefutable and timely that then flows through the whole process.
And what is it? How would you classify the progress the industry has done? Let's start with that bit, like the irrefutable data upfront.
Well, it's making progress. I mean, I think, again, when I look at the Cytora product and what you're trying to do there, and really successfully, what I look at Brookfield too, what they're doing in the core data record, progress is absolutely being made. It's not as quick, never as quick as you want. But progress is being made in terms of creating that standardization.
And in terms of the other data?
So I think people obsess too much about efficiency as well. Mm. In terms of, yes, data is useful to create efficiency. And there's no doubt if we can create the core data record that we're talking about in the Lloyd's market, that will enable a more efficient process. It will enable a much quicker process, timing process. But what I'm really getting excited about is what that enables to do in terms of when you collect all that data, freeing up people's time to make better decisions, freeing up people's time to not have to think about things that could be quite easily automated, to make an automated decision. So you'll really allow people to focus on the things they need to focus on in a better way, giving them more capacity. And that really is the enablement, which I think is much more powerful ultimately than the efficiency point. Taking 2 or 3% at your cost base and it is, yes, useful, but allow your underwriters to have twice the capacity to underwrite more in an efficient way is much more powerful.
So you see the efficiency as a means to free up underwriting capacity?
Well, I think both. I think you always got to focus on how efficient is your organization from a cost point of view.
Yep.
But really, it's for the efficiency there is freeing up capacity for the most important people in the organization, be it underwriters or brokers in the insurance world. How do you free up their capacity to process more effectively or to make better decisions when they're making it?
So just building on that, freeing up capacity to work more? Is it freeing up capacity to be able to spend more time analyzing risks?
You could say you can quote more because you've got more time, or you can concentrate more time on the really important risk. And by the way, when you're doing that, you've got the data all coming together in a standardized, curated way that you understand and presents it, et cetera. So you can, as an underwriter, for example, say, look, I've got all this thing curated for me. Now I can really concentrate on where I'm adding the value is my judgment of whether this is risk to write or not. So making better decisions through better information, but also having capacity to almost make more decisions because you haven't got to worry about collecting this data yourself. This is presented to you.
Okay, so let's play that through. Like, in what ways is it different the day of an underwriter? Once you've got all this data captured in an irresistible way up front, what does the rest of the day look like?
Well, hopefully more interesting because you're actually doing what you're a specialist in. You're not spending time having to sort through emails, sort through presentations, trying to find the information. So hopefully more interesting. Secondly, you're using your time more efficient. So you're actually concentrating on making the underwriting decision. But also you're in some ways delegating where you're comfortable that actually the criteria has been satisfied. You don't have to look at it. If it's a simpler risk or it has certain parameters you're comfortable with, then allow the machine to make the decision. So you're concentrating on the more important decisions and more of your time is done underwriting rather than, let's loosely call it, administration or pulling together of data.
Yeah, manual activities.
Yeah.
And what would you say? So often we talk about how difficult it is to change behaviors, specifically in the London market, but across the whole insurance industry. So what is that kind of change management curve of like underwriters getting more comfortable using data, relying on some of the decisions being made?
Yeah, it's sort of slightly double-edged sword, because I'm sure if you talk to anyone, I'd much rather spend my time underwriting and doing that and making decisions rather than pulling data together or sifting through documents, trying to find things. Having said that, ultimately, you would argue you don't need as many underwriters. The truism of this is that as you do that, or you're going to have maybe the same amount of underwriters, your organization would be two or three times the size, which hopefully is the more positive outcome of that. But there is that whole change of what does it mean for people? Do people accept it? Are they really analytical enough to understand where all that data, and then trust in some ways the engine that's pulling that together rather than having to do it themselves, which again, they traditionally don't.
Yeah. This is something that the whole industry has been talking for a while. And many carriers are making more progress than others. Where is this going to end up? In the sense of, will then the more forward-thinking carriers who are starting to digitize all the kind of the end-to-end workflow, digitizing data from freeing up, as you said, the book could be twice, three times as large for the same number of underwriters. Almost like, is there an option for those who are not embarking on this transition?
That's a good question. People change is inevitable. And I think what we're going to tend to do, like most things, is overestimate the change in the short term, thinking it's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years, and underestimate the change in the longer term. And I think within the 5-year horizon, I think we're going to see some quite dramatic change in the way businesses are operated and the way data is curated, et cetera, and genuinely start seeing straight through processing and risk arbitrage and those sort of things that we're talking about today. And I don't think it will be in the next 2 years, but in the next 5 years, I think you'll see some quite dramatic change. And then that will go back to, what are the skill sets required for people to be successful in the future? And much more analyzing data, understanding the sort of what's presented to them better rather than having to trawl through documents. So, you know, there are people going to be more data literate than they ever been.
Yeah. You picked the example of this is not going to happen. It's not going to turn 180 degrees in 2 years, but we do well in 5. But part of the challenges is if you compound first of all, the time it takes typically for insurers to make investment decisions, they are typically linked to planning cycles, annual planning cycles, so you're often 1 year behind where the investment is going to kick off. That's one. And the second one is, alongside that, is on the whole change management side, right? So if you just compound those two things, is by the time an insurer starts thinking about making this type of investments to the time they're actually capturing the value, 2 or 3 years might go away right away.
Yeah, that's why I think we're not going to see as dramatic change as we might imagine. I mean, if you read the articles, and we are convinced as an organization that there is more and more time, money being spent on data, technology, AI than we've seen before. But as you say, that's going to be a 2 to 3 year cycle before that we really start to see the change come through.
Yeah. So if we now like zoom out a little bit, so we've talked about digitizing those underwriting workflows with benefit for underwriters and the carriers. What other new capabilities, use cases, opportunities are there in the market?
Well, so the one I'm particularly excited about is, again, if you can enable this irrefutable, timely core data record at the point of buying. So when the risk is bound, you have all the data. So if you're in an exchange, you talk about T+2, T+3, et cetera. at the moment, we're T plus 50 or T plus 100. I mean, we don't really know when we actually get the data. But if you can rely on that at the point of buying within, I mean, theoretically within seconds, but let's say within a day, where you have that information, you can then start creating reliable indices. Start to show how the market is performing, because you know the data is accurate and you know it's timely and it's irrefutable. Like, people are going to say, well, where did you get that from? Is it accurate, etc.? Then those indices, in my view, will enable the creation of a secondary insurance market for specialty risks. And for me, there's no better place to do that than London, Lloyd's, except where the real volume is, the size is, etc. And then you can have a secondary market where you can imagine a world where you've got a future on D&O insurance. So you're looking at the indices, spotting the trend, going to your client saying, look, I think that the market is moving in this way. Let's look at the indices over the last X months. Would you like to buy a future on your D&O insurance? Suddenly, we've got a secondary market. We have a whole new set of products to sell. Brokers would love that, the new products to sell. And also, you've got the capital provider saying, look, I'm now understanding the market much better. And often in exchanges, the secondary marketplace becomes bigger than the primary market. But you've got to have that fundamental data reliability that we don't have today. Well, that for me gets really exciting. It comes back. That's not an efficiency play. That's enabling a new market positioning, a secondary market, etc. It doesn't exist today. And I'm very excited that that should be London. I think we're doing a lot of things that means it could be London. I'd like it to be quicker. But I think certainly within the next 5 years, we are going to see a secondary market. And I think it will be enabled by data.
So what needs to happen for that to be a reality? So you've mentioned this. The availability of near real-time data is an obvious one. What else?
I think people need to imagine products. People need to think about what that would look like and what a derivative product looks like in insurance and start being creative and innovative. Again, I'm very supportive of the innovation that's always coming out of London, but imagine what those products look like. But it comes back to, I differentiate. And let me sort of slightly another analogy is, if you listen to music sometimes, now you can have music everywhere. You can have it piped around the house. You can have it on your iPhone, etc. Or you could sit in a room and put a vinyl record on. Not that I'm suggesting we go back to sort of the basics of vinyl. What I'm saying is differentiate it. So I think it comes back to, we need a small core data record that defines the transaction of the industry that can be used to create the transaction and define the basic data that will go into the indices. And we need the ability to get all this other data together in a timely way. And I always look at it differently. There are slightly different problems to solve. Let's not imagine we'll ever standardize a huge amount of data. We won't. We will hopefully standardize a core record and then have really clever technology that brings all the other data together. Those two things operating in parallel. And then if you do have that marketplace, you'll have the indices based on the core data and then access to a whole lot of other data that decides whether you think that that product is worth investing in terms of derivative.
And what's the right player to actually create the marketplace itself?
I personally believe Lloyd's. I believe Lloyd's has the ability to do that, has the wherewithal, the financial backing, the brand, etc., to create that secondary marketplace in London. Is my
Yep. Well, we should do another podcast in 3 years' time and see whether that initiative is.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it's so exciting though, because I really think we're in this journey of people are generally now realizing what data can do in the insurance industry and really getting behind it. So I think we are now really seeing acceleration.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think if we go 5 years from now, one of these things we're looking back. So because right now, probably this secondary marketplace looks more like a vision than a reality, but it's still, I'm totally with you. And in 5 years' time, we'll look back and it will be an obvious expansion of that market, right?
Yeah, and the thing for me is having enough vision to say, let's not just concentrate on things like this core data record for an efficiency play, because it'll never probably justify itself on just an efficiency play. It'll only start to justify us when you see what it can enable in terms of future opportunities.
This is about probably saying, and once again, from this marketplace, what's your views on what else is going on in the market? So we are seeing a lot of movement around MGAs, a lot of M&A activity. What do you think the next few years are going to look like?
Well, first of all, I'm very optimistic about the industry because I think we are fundamentally in a world of escalating frequency and severity of global risks.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're going to see premiums continue to grow. We're going to see severity of risk continue to grow. We're going to see products having to come in to satisfy the new green world, environment world. And, you know, there are the products, the traditional energy products we see today are not going to be the products we're going to see in 5 years' time. So from a risk point of view, we continue to live in an increasingly risky world. Therefore, insurance is going to continue to play a very pivotal role in that world. There may be some big black swan event coming in the future, but I think we all need to accept that we are in an increasingly, however much risk prevention we do, the risk seems to be always ahead of the risk prevention activities we're taking. So optimistically, the industry will continue to play a massively pivotal role in our global world. The second thing I think that's interesting is talent in the industry continues to be one of the biggest challenges. It hasn't been the most attractive industry to come into historically. People are now beginning to see it, I think, more as attractive. But the people who are in the industry are hugely valuable. And therefore, they're being poached to go into different organizations. They're becoming aware very much of their contribution and value. Therefore, they're being very demanding about what they're rewarded and even the structures. So we may even see people coming out of carriers, for example, to go into MGAs just because they can see they may have a more lucrative structure to operate in. So I think talent will be a major part, again, how people manage talent, attract talent, retain talent continues to be a major part of the industry challenge over the next few years. Especially when we talk about some of the things we've just talked about. As the industry changes, again, the people who can enable that change will be very valuable.
And then that is something also we see with many of our clients. Is there's also a big challenge in just attracting new talent into the industry. Just younger talent are more keen on joining in an organization where processes are digitized, where data is available, etc. So almost going back to the start of the conversation, having a more digitized insurance industry is not just better for the industry, it's also the way to attract
absolute
talent.
Yeah, and as people start to realize it's an exciting place to be in the transformation, much like the sort of tax disc for the car, if people would imagine that world in 5 years' time, this would be a very exciting place to be.
Definitely. And from a kind of MGA's IPO perspective, any news?
MGAs are interesting to me because people talk about new MGA. I mean, Lloyd's started as an MGA. We recognize Lloyd's basically is an MGA where you've got a separation between the underwriting and the capital. And so there's nothing new about MGAs, but obviously the last few years they've become very valuable and people have realized the value of them. As long as they're performing, and I would say an MGA has to have the excellent track record of underwriting capability and quality. That's number one. Secondly, it has to have diverse capital base. And thirdly, it has to be growing. Then they are very valuable entities. And people are thinking more creatively about MGAs. And some carriers are saying, look, I want my balance sheet business and I want an MGA alongside it. And we're seeing that. We saw the separation of the business in the case of Fidelis, where the MGA underwriting business separated from the capital. But there's nothing new in MGAs. At the moment, the value continues to be high, as long as it has the quality I talked about in the business of underwriting performance, diversified capital and growth.
And do you think it makes more sense because right now you've got both brokers and carriers setting up MGAs?
This is always the case. I mean, underwriters are always trying to go upstream and get closer to the client, quite understandably. Brokers are always almost coming downstream, so I want to do more of the underwriting. This has always been the battleground of brokers and underwriters sort of overlapping. And I think we'll continue to see that. And sitting right in the middle there now is these MGAs, right? So brokers want MGAs and carriers want MGAs because they sit right in that middle zone, in my view, between the broker and the carrier.
Yeah. From an M&A perspective, so consolidation, acquisitions, IPOs perspective, do you also see this MGA space as the one with the highest activity in the next few years?
Well, at the moment, I mean, private equity obviously plays a massive part in our industry. And over the last few years, private equity hasn't been so keen on balance sheet businesses. Mm. And when I mean so keen, they can get better returns for a risk profile investing in asset-light businesses, such as MGAs or brokers. And we've seen that. So I think we've seen other major investors in the industry preferring to be in MGAs and brokers rather than balance sheet businesses. And I think that trend will continue. As interest rates come down, et cetera, we might say, well, that gets rebalanced. But the trend at the moment, I think, will be to continue to see a lot of the investment going in those asset-light businesses.
Into brokers and MGAs.
So, yeah. But I think the M&A activity generally, obviously we've gone through it, it's reduced. I think 2024, we're going to see it increasing again as interest rates start to come down and a lot of capital that hasn't been deployed. I think we're going to see the M&A activity coming up again.
They're waiting for good opportunities and being deployed in the
year. So I think we're going to see M&A activity increasing in 2024.
Okay. What else do you see as any other major trend in the industry?
We talked about, obviously, the increased investment in data technology and AI. I think IPO activity will increase. Mm-hmm. The other one I would say. There are some very large companies out there where it's going to be very difficult to do anything other than an IPO. So I think then we maybe see some large IPOs coming. Market's still a bit depressed at the moment, but I do think in 2024, the IPO market, we will see increased IPO activity.
When you say IPO, it's IPO carriers or MGAs or brokers?
All three. But certainly, I think there's some big brokers out there that will go down an IPO route.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the growing US E&S market. Mm. I think we're seeing more and more business come out of the admitted market into the E&S market because they haven't got constraints within the admitted market. So the US E&S market will grow and will be very attractive. And so I think that we'll see that growing. I think the other thing is we will see potentially less of that E&S market come to the UK. You're seeing some carriers setting up vehicles in the US just to make sure they try and continue to catch that market if we don't see it coming so much in the UK.
And what is driving that growth in the E&S market?
I think because it's easier to write business in the E&S market. It's more attractive. You can set your own pricing, et cetera. And again, as risks come more complex, come back to, we're seeing the non-standardization coming more quickly out of the admitted market into the E&S market. And again, the constraints around pricing, et cetera, that don't exist in the E&S market.
Okay.
And the other is growth of new products. I think we are going to see a lot more new products. Cyber is going to continue to grow. We're going to see more products addressing environmental change, climate change, et cetera, which is why I remain so optimistic about our industry. The changes that are going from that point of view, plus the continued riskier nature of our world, we have a very exciting future in the insurance industry.
Fantastic. Well, Clive, this has been really like in half an hour. I think it's been fantastic to go from on the way down from the daytime technology and the opportunities for carriers to capture efficiency, but really efficiency to deploy, to create underwriting capacity. We've talked about the increase in abilities and the secondary market in Lloyd's, which is something very exciting. And I'd say for the last 10, 15, 20 years, we've been talking about like how do we make sure Lloyd's stays relevant in the global market. I think this is a fantastic opportunity to have that. And then going into all these M&A, IPOs, MGAs, trends, which I think it sounds like you are very positive about the market with plenty of opportunities.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Well, Clive, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been fantastic to have
you. Thanks to be here. Great.
Making Risk Flow is brought to you by Cytora. If you enjoy this podcast, consider subscribing to Making Risk Flow in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast so you never miss an episode. To find out more about Cytora, visit cytora.com. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.